Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So, it's sort of related to yesterday's video, which I made a category for in the sense that there's arguments that can be made about how really bad the science is of what some physicists are believing. That it's not good science, the history isn't good, like kinetic energy and the two-slit experiment as I illustrated. But gravity's also broken fundamentally. They clung to a theory that, you know, doesn't have any of the required mechanisms. It is kind of a God of the gaps answer to say bent space is basically to escape the real physical difficulty of a real physical theory. You know, that there has to be some kind of mechanism. The electron and the proton are sitting in space. You're saying bent space is motivating them. You know, that's not saying much. How are they motivated? What do they see? What do they feel? You know, what's the actual mechanism moving them? And there is none. So it's a very convenient answer to the question of what gravity is, because it's really just a redescription of the effect. It's not really providing a cause. And so in a sense, it's really bad science because they're pretending it's a cause. They're pretending they learned something, that they said something new. And they didn't say anything new at all. It's not a contribution. It's just a rephrasing of what was already known, the inverse square law. So it's just staying over again that more energy goes in than comes out of a spherical object. Gravity. You know, it's not that complicated what it is, why it is. That's the tricky part. That's the part they totally evaded by, you're totally evading by believing in something called the bent space, because it doesn't explain it at all. All right, so with that premise, in my effort to, you know, get a better conversation, one where I could get actual counter arguments that have something to do with something other than my personal life. you know, my shoes smell or something. So I sent another email out to a physics professor type, well educated, has a blog, and in one of his blog posts, he posted a statement where he's sort of sympathetic to a book he read where the argument was made that there's just not enough, physics isn't susceptible to new ideas from new sources and outside sources. So I said, well, okay, he says he's sympathetic. Let's see if he is. No. So I'll read the letter, the email, it's not that long, just because it has the argument in it, and try to say it in as simple a form as possible. So that's the trick here. That anybody on the outside, any dissident, has been profiled. Okay, the tinfoil hat. Oh yeah, sure, you have a unification theory. Oh yeah, sure. You know, you're dumber than dumb. You're Dunning-Kruger. You know, all this kind of crap. And they don't really deal with the argument being made. They just dismiss it as bullshit. And they dismiss it sometimes, you know, like I said, there's valid critiques to be made. I mean, physics is complicated. It has a lot of experiments. There's a lot of data to keep organized. And clearly, somebody can say something and you can pose a counter argument to dismiss. Now, somebody today, like if we never heard of bent space before, and we already had a theory that was mushy but not too bad, you know, how much credibility would it be given? You know, because it could be dismissed rather quickly by just saying it's not a real theory. It's not an explanation. You're not describing or explaining how it happens. You're just saying what happens. We already know what happens. You know, we don't need another way of saying what happens. You know, that kind of dismissing. Because there really isn't a mechanism. So, you know, those kind of arguments are valid. I mean, it's valid to dismiss somebody because they say something that's not true. But that also gives them an excuse to find any mistake. You know, you divide instead of multiply somewhere. And say, because of that mistake, I'm dismissing. You know, and that's what you see a lot of, too. Is that they don't really get to the core argument. You know, wave versus particle theories, for example. They just do some... Lesage gravity was debunked centuries ago. No, yeah, okay, that's an interesting fact, but it doesn't mean that all particle theories therefore have been debunked. That kind of thing. So anyway, I saw a little bit of your blog where you state you have a sympathy for the idea that physics is too closed to new ideas from outside sources. Figured I would test that sympathy and see if you'll give me anything close to a fair opportunity to convince you I might be a good outside source. So you're just trying to compose an argument that's brief enough to be read, but complete enough to give the indication that it realistically is possible that there is a simple answer to the question, and it's a better answer. Okay. As you seem to have a particular interest in the field, in field theory and gravity, I think I can offer you a very simple solution to gravity that fits perfectly with classically grounded quantum mechanics. So, you know, the part of quantum mechanics that has to do with quanta of energy moving through the universe. Yeah, that part of quantum mechanics. Obviously, you're not going to find a theory that is compatible with entanglement and multiverses, in my opinion. Forget it. It's silly. Anyway, being as brief as possible, gravity is about a differential in pressure. So that's how it should, in my opinion. This is a big flaw in how everybody talks about it. It's just quite obvious that who cares what's causing it, in the sense of, first, let's describe it correctly. I mean, it's clear that for somehow, on one side of you, up there, there seems to be, okay, more pressure than there is below you. And that's why you are pushed down into the earth. So that part's pretty obvious, that somehow less is coming out of the earth than is coming out of the universe. The rest condition of the universe versus the rest condition of the earth, that is the status condition, the regular average condition, is one where there seems to be a deficit. More goes in than comes out. All right. More on the outside than on the inside. More going in than comes out. I just said that. If we assume the stuff going in and coming out is force, stuff moving the speed of light. Now, so that's hardly a terrible assumption. Let's just say gravity's a real thing, okay? Not some sort of bent geodesical blah, 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 but something real. We'd say, oh, yeah, it seems like it's probably made out of this little force bit stuff, you know, the stuff that light, magnetism, and all that crap is made out of. It'd be something like that, some kind of force stuff. Then the simple question is, how is this indestructible force? So, see, I'm assuming he has some knowledge of physics. And so I'm, putting in there the already built-in statement that, yes, we know that force is indestructible. So how can more go in than comes out? Because then the Earth would have to get bigger, or every material object would have to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And that doesn't really happen. So... So the question is force seems to be destroyed, okay, by spending time inside matter. Something like that. Indestructible force seemingly destroyed to create the imbalance. So I'm sort of just trying to imply, hey, wait, if you just think for a minute about what if that first law, you know, this law of physics, you know, that a force can't be destroyed, created or destroyed, like matter. That you can't create or destroy these elemental functions. What if there is a way that you effectively destroy it? You know, you're not really destroying it, but you're destroying its function. You're stealing a little bit of its mojo. All right, that's what I'm trying to imply. Whether he got it or not, who knows? Another simple assumption provides the answer. If matter uses energy to move, that is, if electrons and protons, so I'm trying to emphasize matter is electrons and protons, matter isn't something else, it's just those two things. That's all that's really happening. The small universe is the only universe, blah, 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 blah. If matter uses energy to move, that is, if electrons and protons are physically pushed through a sustained contact with force, then it could be understood that while pushing the matter, the force will not be traveling at the speed of light. So, I guess I could do a little bit of addition. So the disappointing thing, I mean, I did link him to the gravity, the simple answer video. And I know it still only has 500 views, and I've been promoting those three videos pretty heavily. And then, so that's rather disappointing. It's a good video, you know, it quickly gets to the point that the current bent space theory is vacuous. And that, you know, all we're seeking is some explanation for that pressure differential. So we're back to objects and how they would be incorporated in terms of what happens when a force hits an electron, for example. And I'm almost saying it doesn't matter which way you think about it. I mean, well, certainly this model that the quanta, okay, of the force. All right. No chance that's good enough. New chance. Well, some chance, but not much chance. Okay, so you have this little force bit, and thinking of it as some kind of pebble you throw at it, it sort of hits, and then it, you know, falls down and loses its energy, and then this thing sort of has the energy and moves. That model is kind of, well, it's not going to work, because we know force doesn't do this drop-dead thing. So the idea is that it also can't bounce off, okay, and give it momentum. It can't do both. I mean, it can't be flying this way and moving the matter this way. So that's not going to work either. So the idea is it either has to get incorporated into. So let's say it's traveling and it goes inside of it. And now it moves it at a slower speed. You know, it might go, it started off going 50 miles an hour. That's the speed of light in this example. And now it's going 10 miles an hour because it's pushing the heavy thing. Its little bit of velocity has to be spread over this entire mass. So therefore, the speed is reduced. So this will work. You know, I think it's a little more complicated than necessary, but it works. I mean, the simple way I would illustrate it, just my personal preference, would be just think of that it sticks. Okay, it hits, the force hits, it sticks, and it pushes the matter. Okay, at the slower speed. Okay, so you go in with a speed of this, that means you would be here, point B, point A, if you didn't hit anything. If you're pushing matter, though, then you only get this far. And that's a big difference in terms of now you've effectively lost energy. If this is the speed of light and the distance you went at the speed of light, obviously you're not going the speed of light anymore, which means your momentum, your P, okay, is now smaller because you're really not traveling as much distance, and therefore you can't have your real velocity. Your real velocity is getting used up inside the matter. And so, in effect, even though you're moving matter slow isn't the same as you going fast. So it's not going to have the same effect on the universe, the rest of the universe. The simple argument is when this thing attaches, say it sticks, then if another force comes this way and hits, that one will reflect, and this one will reflect, and the matter will now go back to being stationary. So the idea is the matter is just jerked around. Now, there can be a lot more force going this way, like a cosmic ray can hit a piece of matter, and therefore it's going to be very durable in its motion because it's just going to keep reflecting. Okay, now it's reflecting out the back end too, but the point is it can go into quite a great deal of force it can plow into, and it's still going to make progress. It's not going to be slowed down much. So anyway, the point is that for each motion of the electron, you know, each time it moves from a point A to a point B, you know, each time it goes anywhere, the force that moved it has lost some of its mojo because it didn't get where it would have been. So in a sense, the force has been diminished in its momentum because it's used its momentum to move something with less momentum, theoretically, technically less momentum. Less momentum as a force. Matter isn't a force, okay? It interacts with forces, but it's not itself a force. And therefore, there is a real loss of the energy of the universe moving matter. If it didn't move matter, then the force in the universe would be doing more stuff because it wouldn't have been delayed moving matter around. And you can understand inside the Earth there's lots of this kind of motion, jiggling. And every time it does this, and ends up back in the same place, all that energy is just kind of wasted energy. It's just taking movement out of the universe because you did movement that didn't do anything, didn't accomplish any change in the universe. And so that's an absorption of the energy. It seems brief and good, well enough stated. So we'll see. Moving on. So it's in the other video, the same thing, just stated a little differently. That's all you can do, really, right? Is state it differently until one of those different statements clicks inside of a brain and they say, oh, that's sort of a good point. I mean, if I'm going to be honest, okay, I don't like this guy, I don't like his attitude, I don't like his approach, but the fact is, that's a good point. You know, that kind of thing should be happening. All right, so where the hell was I? All right, and simple answer, okay, if matter uses energy to move, that is, if electrons and protons are physically pushed to sustain contact with force, that is, they absorb the force, or the force pushes them, then it can be understood. Okay, anyway. Then it can be understood that while pushing the matter, the force will not be traveling at the speed of light. So anybody who knows anything about physics should know, well, yeah, if the force isn't traveling the speed of light, that's a diminishing of its momentum, theoretically. Okay, I think it can be reasonably stated if a force did spend some time traveling less than the speed of light, it would be fair to say that it has lost some portion of its total energy. So you could understand that if you are delayed somewhere, your capacity to go to other places and do other things is now diminished. Okay. It could be said that time is energy. So for us, you know, time is money. But for a force, time is energy. If they're not on time, if they're not going the speed of light, then they're losing energy. Okay, just like you would be losing money if you have to waste time standing in line somewhere. All right, it could be said that time is energy for a force, and if it is delayed in its progress, it is reduced in what it can do in the universe. So this establishes an absence of power that the force has after now that it's moving matter, and that's why there's less coming out of the Earth than went into the Earth, and that's why you're getting pushed into the surface of the Earth. All right, by just assuming that force sticks to matter, it is pushing. It can be understood that all electrons and protons jiggling at some speed less than the speed of light inside the Earth are in effect consuming energy to move. So the electrons and protons are doing this, but they're not really going anywhere, and that all of that jiggling consumed the energy that made the stuff jiggle. And that by consuming that energy, it didn't get to the outside universe when it should have. Ergo, a simple explanation for Earth's gravity, pressure differential. The universe simply pushes in more force than the Earth emits, reflects back to the universe. So another idea that some physicists, probably most physicists, should sort of have some realization. I can't say, though, that any physics instructor ever really said it. You know, we're sitting here in the universe, and all we can do, really, is just reflect the energy that goes in. And it just, there's just different amounts of time. Some things we reflect, you know, something comes in, a force hits me, one of your cell phone conversations goes in. It can spend a lot of time moving around inside of me, jiggling me, and then pop out. Or it could just reflect. So it can, the energy can be given back to the universe quickly without affecting too many pieces of me. Or the energy can go in, affect a lot of pieces, you know, and then the pieces take that energy, combine it with other little bits of energy, and send it back out again. So, you know, much later. So it can spend time moving my electrons and protons, or it can just reflect off the first couple it hits. And that's all we can do as we sit here in the universe. And that's what everything is doing, including something like a magnet. A magnet's just taking in the energy from the universe, and it's giving it back in a pattern. And that pattern can be seen by other magnets. Bingo. Answer. Complete, even. All right. So again, I'll say that again. The universe simply pushes in more force than the Earth admits reflects back to the universe. So by delaying is using, it uses some of the energy. Okay. I have developed this theory in much more detail. If interested, I have some detailed yet concise videos on the subjects. I mean, they're all sort of related. So what is gravity? What is energy? What is the photon? They really do show how it's all related. It's all the same stuff. I should have put the what is magnetism in here too, I think. But anyway. So thank you for any fair consideration you're willing to give these arguments. And so far, I can't get any fair consideration. Just raggy bullshit about how stupid I am to question their glorious conclusions. And they're mostly religious conclusions, frankly. They're mostly God of the Gap, the reinventions of holy ghosts and things. You know, kind of irrelevant pieces of religion. You know, like the Holy Ghost, this, you know, nonsensical, you know, catch-all. The Holy Ghost might be, you know, if there's some specific part of religion that you don't understand, somebody could just say, well, the Holy Ghost does that part. Yeah. Yeah, God doesn't bother with it. The Holy Ghost does. Why are some of my prayers not answered? Well, the Holy Ghost is kind of blind in one eye, and he drops a lot of your requests, your prayer requests. Or you could say, oh, the Holy Ghost likes to eat paper, and so, you know, eats some of your, you know. So anyway, this is just, you know, the fact that none of this can be challenged, none of this can be, you know, sensibly rethought. The theories are a mess. They're not at all complete, you know. I mean, Einstein was ridiculed just for that simple statement, just to dare to state your quantum mechanics is an incomplete theory. How dare he challenge us? You know, and again, the irony of Einstein being responsible for such an incomplete theory is bent space. I mean, it's so incomplete. No energy, no mechanism, no physics, really, no physical mechanism, just some sort of magical bullshit. I mean, outside of the two-dimensional model, outside of this stupid bent fabric crap, you know, where you use gravity to model gravity, it's just a convergence then. It's just saying that electrons and protons, minding their own business somewhere, you put them in space and they're going to be able to they're going to be able to tell, based on feeling the geodesic, which way they're supposed to go. They're supposed to be converging inside of an object. heading right for its center of gravity for some reason. Well, what's the reason? I'd say it's because it is raining in the universe. And there's more rain on one side than the other. Because the rain gets slowed down, jiggling matter. It's a simple, elegant, complete answer. It wins Occam's razor contest by light years of distance. And yet, all this difficulty in having the subject actually addressed as to why this physical model fails. Anyway, and again, in competition with a model that escapes all responsibility to account for all of its effects because it doesn't have any effects. So it's like the dark matter answer. We'll just create some kind of matter that only has one feature, and therefore we don't have to account for all the other things it would cause, because we're just going to give it one single property, even though the universe doesn't contain anything like that. There's nothing we can compare that to and say, see, the universe made dark something over there. Well, it didn't do that. It doesn't make these things with one property. Things in the universe just can't get along with having just one property. All right, anyway. So, I've done all I can do in terms of trying to make you aware that there's real arguments to be made here and that you're evading them, that physics is evading them. And the fact is, I'm just saying, it's, to me, I'm quite certain this is the future. The future will figure this out, and you're all going to be just humiliated in the sense if you're still alive when that happens. And you're going to be kind of cursed in the future for causing this insane, pointless delay, wasting mankind's time jiggling around in your little bullshit, your little god bubbles. There's real answers to be grabbed, and you're preventing them from being grabbed with your stupid hostility to having to accept, maybe my guys made a mistake, maybe team physics, was a little bit lame, it wasn't quite as heroic as it likes to describe itself as, and just accept that, there's you should have never taken some of these wrong turns. Okay, kinetic energy theory, wrong turn. Bent space, wrong turn. Wavicles, wrong turn. Multiverses, wrong turn. Entanglement, wrong turn. Okay. So anyway, till the next time, such and so forth. And whatnot. So, I guess that'll be all. Thank you. Leave it at that. So, till the next time and such. This has been DraftPhysics.com video presentation without any Google interference. Yeah. With any Google scum. The video doesn't have any Google scum on it.